Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking to Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks. We have a lot of issues to tackle with her tonight, including, of course, the status of COVID-19 and vaccinations in the county. Lines are open if you have a comment or question for the county executive as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. County Executive Angela Alsobrooks, thanks for joining the conversation. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Harold.
Absolutely. I want to jump right into the COVID questions because that is the thing that remains not only in the headlines, but also on the minds of public servants as well as people in the community. There have been some new openings of vaccine sites in the county and some new numbers. How would you characterize where the county is right now compared with the rest of the state?
Well, you know, we're making tremendous progress now. I am so pleased that we are really administering these vaccines at a rate that is, I think, really commendable. In fact, we went from, I have to tell you, 23 in the state in terms of our vaccination rate. We're now up to number 3. So we are getting these vaccines out the door as quickly as we can get them in. The primary issue for us has been over the last few weeks the supply of the vaccine, but we're seeing that increase each week. So we have now seen in the county that we've had 214,000 vaccines that have been administered, so 214,000 doses of the vaccine. We still have a long way to go. But, you know, we are feeling encouraged each week as the supply increases and as our infrastructure grows. We have now 5 sites where our residents can go. These are health department sites. We also have the First Baptist Church of Glen Arden that opened. We still have the Six Flags site. We're using those mobile units to penetrate the community. We have at least 3 of them now. We're going to grow those units. We believe up to 8 units that can administer 50 shots per unit. So we're going to homes to vaccinate our homebound seniors. We're taking those vaccines also out to areas by zip codes where we see low vaccination rates to make sure equity is at the top of what we're doing. So I'm feeling, you know, that we're going to be able to get all of our Prince Georgians vaccinated and we'll be able to get everybody protected and hopefully get us back with our families and loved ones very soon.
How would you characterize the governor's equity task force? It's not been around in that form for very long. How would you say it's working?
Well, it is led by General Burkhead.
Yes.
Janine Burkhead, she is truly excellent. We've talked to General Burkhead multiple times per day. It was through our conversations with her that we were able to really turn the corner to some extent. As you know, for example, at Six Flags, the initial numbers came out, and Prince George's, we found, were only receiving about 10%, maybe 11% of the vaccines, and the rest of them were going to people who didn't live in our county. We talked to General Burkhead, and that's where we have the 2,100 that are reserved there. And she said, better yet, we're going to do 10,000 at least per week at a freestanding site only for Prince George's. And that's how we got to the First Baptist Church of Glen Arden. We also have additional vaccine that's coming in now to CVS, Walmart, Wegmans. But General Burkhead is the person who got it and said, you know what? We can do much better. We must. The numbers don't lie. They told us that we were at the bottom in terms of the number of vaccine we were getting. We were getting on average, I believe it was like an average of 9 per 100,000 residents, where other parts of the state were getting 17 per 100,000 residents. So the numbers really did tell the story for us, and General Burkhead and that equity task force really did respond to the inequity that was very clear, and we're hopefully increasing, well, we are increasing every week and getting better.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks about all things Prince George's County, of course, right now, looking at the COVID-19 situation in the county. If you have a comment or a question for her, please don't hesitate to give us a call. Talk to me a little bit more about that when you were talking about the number or the amount of vaccines that, you know, the county was getting compared to now. Why wasn't it obvious to those in charge, above your pay grade, as they may say, in Annapolis, that with the numbers being so high in Prince George's and, of course, in Montgomery, that the squeaky wheel, meaning those numbers, didn't get the grease earlier?
Well, you know what? I think that initially the state was making decisions about where to send vaccine based on speed. And, you know, I don't know what other numbers they were looking at, but what we were told in the beginning is that the county would be guaranteed 975 vaccines per week. Now, you can understand that we overall, we've had 190,000 people on our pre-registration list awaiting those vaccines. We were able to kind of narrow it down and whittle that down. But we were getting 975 vaccines per week. So you can imagine with a list of 120,000 to 190,000 at any given time, this was just not cutting it. And that increased to 4,700. We're now up to a guarantee that the state will send us 5,700 vaccine per week. And they are now also, as I mentioned, the other sites around the county, including the church, and we're Reed Temple, and we're at CVS. And so now we're sending those vaccines to our partners also. But that gives you some sense about the supply of vaccine. And the truth is you can't give out vaccine you don't have. So, you know, the numbers were, it was very frustrating. It was very frustrating to us. It was very frustrating to our residents. But we continue to work with the state, and we're very pleased that they heard the concerns from us and from all of us in the county, the other leadership, the constituents, and that vaccine has really started to pick up each week. And the president tells us that by May, we're going to be fully into phase three. The county expects to be right there with them. Where everyone who wants a vaccine, supply is the only issue, but provided that the government sends the vaccine, everyone who would like to have that vaccine will be able to get it.
I want to talk to you about that last part, about everyone who would like the vaccine. You have spoken for several months about issues regarding vaccine hesitancy, although recently you said that it was less about vaccine hesitancy in communities of color and more about access. On what do you base that, and do you still believe that vaccine hesitancy is an issue?
I believe the access was the issue. As I mentioned before, we had up to 190,000 overall people who pre-registered to receive a vaccine, which said to me, people do want the vaccine. Now that we had the 975, followed by now the 5,700. So the issue really is access, but I can tell you that in our numbers, one of the areas I'm concerned about, I've been watching the numbers each week, is we are seeing about a 30-point spread between men and women, meaning that women, about 60% of the people receiving the vaccine now are women, only about 30-plus percent are men. So we do have to increase, we have to really continue to educate everyone in our community. We want the men to be vaccinated and protected as well. So we'll see as we go along. I think that our senior residents are definitely very eager for the vaccine. If I can be honest, as I'm talking to younger residents, that's where I'm seeing people have some concerns about it. And so we'll have to continue communicating with them, educating them. We have some plans for that. My father's involved in the Commission on Fathers, Men, and Boys, and they have some programming planned along with our Office of Community Relations. We're going to be pushing out to get men vaccinated also and to make sure we're messaging to them. So we'll see how it goes along, but it has been accessed, and now I think if there is a concern that we have, it is that I would like to see more men feel comfortable with the vaccine, but we'll do whatever we have to make everybody comfortable and educate them.
We are talking to Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks about all things Prince George's County. If you have a comment or a question for her about anything, whether it's COVID or any other issue in your community, we invite you to call it 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. As always, we will be taking your phone calls up until 8 o'clock. I do have someone on the line. Let me go to this call real quick. Martin calling from Upper Marlboro. Martin, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Martin, are you there? Martin. Martin, give me a call if you have a chance. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I do want to talk to you about some other COVID issues, and this is something that every municipality is going to have to address, even as the dynamics of the pandemic begin to change. And that is the budget process. From your perspective, what impact do you believe this pandemic is going to have on the budget? A year or so ago, there were so many dire predictions from, you know, from yourself, from lawmakers and politicians in Virginia, in D.C., across this country. We were hearing so much of the same. What do you say?
So I think, you know, so the impact to our budget was that we did not see any growth in our revenues over the last, it'll be the couple of fiscal cycles, and this is what will impact us, is that we didn't see any growth. We didn't see quite as much loss as we expected, and we're very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
But we need our revenues to grow each year. To keep up with the expenses of the county, and that was where the challenge was. Now, we are expecting that we will recover very nicely from the pandemic. It will take us some time, but we have continued to make really choices in this budget that we recently sent to the council that we believe are disciplined choices, but they also, I think, reflect some optimism. In other words, we continue to invest in areas, including education, where we fully funded the school system's budget this year. We made investments also in areas including economic development agencies, where we have invested in technology to make sure that we're able to continue to create jobs. We've also invested in our health department. You know, I made a decision to reallocate $20 million from a police capital project, a police facility, and I have moved that money into a mental health facility, an addictions care facility, to make sure that we're dealing with behavioral health issues and mental health care. So we made some choices that reflect our optimism about moving forward, but also allow us to deal with these social injustices that we've seen over the years, the food desert, the lack of access to health care, police reform. We also funded positions in the police department to deal with police reform, including an equity, a person to deal with race and equity in our department, two psychologists that we hire for the police department. So we're making choices that we believe reflect the concerns that our residents have expressed and that we've seen throughout the country in terms of equity and social justice.
About the reopening and recovery, are you concerned that, and admittedly, Prince George's and Montgomery has moved much more slowly than, you know, the rest of the state when it comes to, you know, reopening, or maybe I should say more carefully, pick your term. But are you concerned about the, while you try to reopen, that there has been, you know, concern from the CDC about reopening too quickly? We've seen what South Beach has become this past week. I'm sure you don't want National Harbor to look like South Beach. Your thoughts about that?
So we have opened at a pace that we believe is responsible based on the numbers that we're seeing. Our numbers are declining. We're a little below 5% in terms of our positivity rate, which is not tremendous, but at least gives us the idea that it's safe to begin reopening to some extent. So we opened 50% capacity pretty much across the board for indoor dining and other retail establishments. But, you know, Prince George's County was hit hard in a way that we can't forget. And the devastation that we felt, the loss of lives, we lost over 1,300 of our residents to COVID-19. And so we are taking a cautious approach. I have been so really blessed that my residents have been very supportive of this approach. They want me to not only protect their livelihood, but to protect their lives. And so we want all of our businesses to open eventually. And we believe that because we're making measured choices now that listen to science and data, that we're going to be able to reopen. But we want to do so in a way where it's lasting, it's sustainable, that we're able to continue to move forward. So our businesses, we've given over used over $41 million in grant funding for our businesses. to assist them during this time. We will continue to assist the businesses, our small businesses and local businesses, and we'll get through this.
Okay. We've got a lot of phone calls on the line. We want to remind our listeners that we will be taking your phone calls all the way up until 8 o'clock. So please, if you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I will take your phone call at 202-319-7810. Michael, calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Michael, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, go right ahead, please, quickly.
I wanted her to speak to the trust factor regarding blacks and the COVID-19 vaccinations, because if you read Harriet Washington's book on medical apartheid, it documents the historical drug testing on blacks unbeknownst to their awareness or their consent. So I think the number one thing regarding the COVID-19 vaccination with blacks is a trust factor, and that's the number one thing that that prevents a lot of blacks from consenting to taking the vaccination. And that in turn has been used against us because they're saying that blacks are reluctant to take the vaccination because of this historical.
Michael, let me see what the county executive has to say about your point. Thank you so much for your phone call. Our county executive also, Bruce.
Yeah, thank you so much, Michael, for that point. It is well-founded, you know, and I understand the concern. And that's the reason we actually brought Dr. Fauci to host a virtual event in Prince George's County to address the concerns. And what he told us is that according to scientists and doctors, COVID has been a part of a broader virus that has been studied for many, many years. And that has been a lot of information that we had a head start on developing the vaccine due to decades of research. And Dr. Fauci and others who have come, the doctors and scientists have told us that this vaccine is safe and effective, and that it also has been tried on thousands, tens of thousands of diverse individuals from all walks of life. And so that is the information we have, but I certainly do understand and respect the concern. I do, and that's the reason that we're going to have to really continue to educate the public. And the reason that we want this vaccine administered in trusted places like the church was a great place, community centers where, and we've had other community leaders to come forward to say that they feel comfortable. That's the reason it was important. Vice President Kamala Harris, our president, and other trusted members of our community to step forward and say they trust the efficacy, people who have the information. I say that it is safe for us to take.
I need to take a break, but we want to remind our listeners that you can hear this and every discussion via podcast on WHUR.com. It's posted before 9 p.m. every night. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Make sure you download the app from Google Play or the Apple Store. Of course, the original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. Ban from Upper Marlboro, Bruce and Glenarden, and Brian in D.C. You're next. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM. And channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking to Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks about all things Prince George's County. If you have a comment or a question, we invite you to call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Brian, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Brian. What's on your mind? Brian, are you there? Brian, give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Ban calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling, Ban. What's on your mind?
Okay, my name is Ann.
Oh, Ann. I'm sorry. Thank you so much for that.
I was calling because I wanted to know at the centers like Six Flags and First Baptist Church, are they giving out all three different kinds of the vaccine or is there no choice? Because I'd like to get the Pfizer or the Moderna. I really don't want to chance the Johnson & Johnson.
Okay, Ann, thank you for calling. Look, all my neighbors have called. Ann, Michael, I don't know these folks, but you all live in Upper Marlboro where I live. But thanks for calling. So this is what we know is that we don't know from one day to the next which vaccine we will have. The state will from one week to the next. The state sends us what they have, and we just administer whatever they send. And so we don't get to choose which one, but we, you know, we can let you know beforehand which vaccine it is. We try not to have people choosing. You know, we kind of want people to we just give what we have. But I certainly understand the preference that you have, and I think a lot of people have, you know, various concerns. So, but we do give out what we have. We don't choose from one day to the next.
Okay, so are you getting mostly one kind or just all of them?
We're getting all of them. We get Pfizer, Moderna, and the Johnson & Johnson. And like I said, because we have to give out whatever the state sends us, we don't know from one week to the next what amount of the allotment they will send from one kind or another. But we're, you know, told based on the guidance that we've gotten is we just have to give what we have.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ann, for giving us a call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks about all things Prince George's County. Bruce calling from Glenarden. Thanks for calling, Bruce. What's on your mind?
I have a comment for the exec.
Yes, sir.
I've been trying. I'm one of the baby boomers, and you know a lot of baby boomers are retiring this year. And you can't go to any place in Maryland to do your business with an expert at your disposal. The doors are locked. They got messages on there calling this number. You call the number, the phone just ring, ring, ring. I thought that we got to a limited amount of people that can let back into these facilities, because it doesn't make any sense, me now, being a senior, that I have to go through all these changes. Go to the email. Come call this number. And nobody comes to the door to give you information. They just stare at you. I try to do services on Brycey Road today. They just stared at me. I went to Seabrook Social Security. I went to the other one in Bowie Social Security Bill. Everybody's on lockdown, won't even come to the door, give you information, give you packages, or offer you a package so you can either print it, or if for those that don't have or not computer literally, that they can have the service. And it's really ridiculous that you have to go through these changes. And again, when you call the number, it just rings and rings and rings.
Bruce, let me see if the county executive can offer you some information. County executive.
Hi, Bruce. Yeah, thank you so much for calling. So, Bruce, which service is it that you're trying to get? Are you trying to reach a government?
Yeah, all government service, Social Security, Human Resources.
Okay.
Yeah, Social Security, Human Resource. I went to Brycey Road. I went to Bowie. I just came up, and I went to Seabrook.
Okay, do me a favor, Bruce. I have an answer for you. Call 311. That is our number for the Office of Community Relations, and they will be happy to assist you in getting through to whichever the agencies. You just dial 311 and hit pound. And we have a call center all set up, prepared to help you.
Yes, because, you know, this year is the baby boomers' year. This year and next year. So I'm one of the baby boomers.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for your phone call.
You. Yeah,
Bruce, thank you so much for giving us a call and sharing your concerns. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks about all things Prince George's County. I wanted to go back to something that we were discussing before the break as it relates to the budget. Last year, really at the height of the pandemic, you were saying that even talking about raising taxes last year was not a good idea. But here we are a year later. Is that something you may now consider in order
to? We did not we did not raise taxes in this budget. And you know, what we're concerned about now pretty much is we've made some choices in the government, freezing hiring. We've made some of those kinds of choices. We have held our expenses. We made some minor cuts in some of our agencies. The only fee that that we had this year was a fee to deal with flooding and stormwater, but we did not raise taxes in this budget.
What about furloughs or layoffs? Is that something that is on your radar?
Well, it's something we're trying desperately to avoid, and we've done that by, again, freezing the hiring. being careful also with raises and those kinds of things. We're making some adjustments, but generally we are just really trying to be very disciplined. As I said, many of our agencies in the government had to come into this budget with a reduction in terms of the amount that they were asking for their agencies. So we've made those kinds of sacrifices because we do not want to furlough and lay off.
In addition to those considerations, is there any chance that there may be some reduction in services?
No, we expect to be able to deliver the same level of service that we have delivered over time. And so we're, you know, also making sure your trash has been collected. We did see that, of course, in the height of the pandemic, we had some reduction that people probably experienced. But we, the government, was fully open, and we're continuing to deliver services, bus services, trash services. All of our agencies have been open, although some have been doing so remotely. But we continue to deliver services to our residents, and we will continue to.
About the trash, now that you bring it up, your predecessor reduced trash collection from twice a week to once a week. It was a money issue. When you were running for our county executive, one of the things that you said was that you would consider going to twice a week. The county is still on once a week trash collection. So how do you respond to county residents who want to see twice a week trash collection again?
Yeah, I'd like to see twice a week trash collection for our residents who value that service. And I can tell you that the pandemic affected the way we look at how we spend money. And so I was in office a little over a year, when the pandemic struck, and of all the things we planned, the pandemic was not one of them. And so now as we're making smart choices, again, to make sure that we are not cutting services, is something that I certainly am interested in looking at as we go forward. But in this budget cycle, it just was not something that was feasible.
One of the other things, now that the weather is warming up, and I know this is going to be a particular challenge, again, here we are 1 year or so after the pandemic, school, such as it is going to be out soon, even as it is, we're going back to this hybrid, situation. But summer is happening, and I think there are parents who are going to be concerned about, what am I going to do with my children? Gosh, they've been asking that question for the past year. Are there going to be summer programs that the county is going to be able to offer? What kind of plans does the county have? Does your office have, your administration, in looking at keeping young people occupied during this summer?
So one of the items we did keep in our budget was the Summer Youth Enrichment Program. So we are still operating the Summer Youth Enrichment Program for our youth, and we'll be sending out, continuing to send information for parents to register their children for this program. In addition to that, we're going to be working with the school system to offer, last summer we had free summer school, but I have to really say to our parents, you not only want your children involved in the Summer Youth Enrichment Program, but if I can say something very forward, as a community, we're going to have to do everything we can also this summer to make sure that our students and children are involved in enrichment. We've had a full year of distance learning. It was not as easy for some children as it was for others, and I am so concerned about the achievement gap that could grow over the summer. So all of the resources we have at the local library, we'll be working with the school system to make sure that we're filling the gap with summer school and other enrichment tutoring, all of those things. And so this summer, we want our kids to have a good time and to have fun, and they need to get out the house. They've been, in the house for a year now. But please, as a community, we cannot forget that we're going to have to do some schoolwork this summer as well to make sure that our children are not falling behind.
Are you concerned that has already happened, particularly when there may be language barriers, challenges for your brown community, the Latinx community, as well as, you know, some of the other immigrants who are, you know, joining Prince George's County's school community?
Oh, absolutely. Before we went into the pandemic, Prince George County educates the largest number of students who speak English as a second language in the state. We also educate the largest number of disabled students in the state, and 62% of our students are on free and reduced lunch and are regarded as disadvantaged. So we came into the pandemic with a large population of students who really needed our assistance and support. Those students went home for a year. And so I am very concerned about making sure that we do everything we can to not only prepare those kids to come back to school in the fall, but we're going to have to do a tremendous amount of work to make sure that our kids are not falling behind in those core subjects. And as I understand it, there was some testing that was done, and that concern is a very legitimate concern.
I want to talk to you about the police department. You mentioned some diversity decisions that you made, earlier in this conversation, and the reports that have been, you know, moving through the courts, particularly the Graham report, after it was unredacted, it named former Chief Stawinski, named, you know, the current acting chief of Velez, and, you know, and others who were not at best focused on some of the complaints that officers of color have had for years. It was different from the report that was submitted by former Montgomery County Police Chief Tom Manger, which found no deficiencies. I want to just ask you just first about the difference in the reports. Doesn't that give you pause because the reports were so strikingly different?
Well, you know what, so as far as the substance of the reports are concerned, since those are matters that are subject to litigation, I can't discuss those reports. But what I can tell you is this. First of all, the lawsuit was filed 2 weeks after I came into office, regarding very long-standing concerns and issues from the department. And part of what I have done is to form that police reform task force. We spent from July until December with a diverse group of individuals who really took time to look at issues inside the department, including how we train, how we hire, how we retain. It looked also at many of the other weaknesses regarding officers who didn't live in our county, mental health. So it really took a deep look at many of the issues in the department. Came back with 50 recommendations. I had accepted 46 of those. We're in the process right now of implementing the reform that was set out by that task force. I am also very soon, going to be announcing a new police chief. So we will be moving in a different direction. And making sure that we're able to address not only the concerns of our department, but addressing the concerns of this moment, that social justice and police reform are needed not just here, but all across the country. Prince George's County will not be left behind. We are standing up a department that can move into the next century with all of the reforms that are necessary. And I'll say this, Harold, and I've said it before, I'm going to say it this way. It does not take a lot of talent to spot an issue. I have never denied that there are concerns, issues. We have them like every other department, but it takes much more thought and intentionality to actually solve what you see. And so I find that people, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about what the issue is, but I'm really interested now in implementing the reforms that will fix it. And that's what we're going to do that. We're in the process of doing it now.
You spoke about the reforms, the 47 recommendations. Does that make it much more difficult to hire a police chief, knowing not only that Prince George's County specifically is undergoing an upheaval, change, challenges, again, pick your word, but also in looking at some of the obstacles that police chief leadership will, what will be required going in. I mean, we have seen, in Montgomery County, there were some difficulties in getting a police chief, even pre-pandemic. What kind of challenges have you encountered in trying to make this high-profile hire?
Well, you know what? It's not just the chief, but it is a difficult time for recruitment in general. I mean, I can be very honest with you about that. I don't think Prince George's County is unique in that way. And you're right. It is a time where it's a very challenging time to conduct a search like this one. So we've taken our time. We actually hired a talent acquisition firm to assist us in our search, and we've done a very comprehensive search to make sure that we were able to consider, various candidates from various backgrounds. But I think you're right to point out, Harold, this is a really difficult time to engage in a search like this one. And again, it's not just the chief. What we're finding is that our recruitment efforts throughout have been a real challenge. It is difficult to attract people to the profession of policing right now. It's just a whole different time. And so we are working through it. But you're right, this is a very challenging time. Mm.
There's also been, and this is about the social justice piece, about changing names for, monuments, not just, nationwide, but, again, in Prince George's County. And we know that there is, it's the county's responsible legacy task force. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because we haven't seen a lot of discussion about that specifically in Prince George's County about, changing names that may, heretofore people may not have thought that, this person may have been a racist, have spoken against people of color, may have owned slaves, all of those kinds of things.
That's a good point. We actually were engaged in some of that work before this moment, before mm-hmm. the pandemic, before the social justice movement. I'll give you an example. There was Richard B. Taney.
Yes.
Middle school. That was a school that was down the street from my home growing up as a child, which is now Thurgood Marshall Middle School. And so we did have some of those changes that have happened. And I suspect that we are now taking a good look at many of those figures. We're, comparing it to history, kind of really this is a moment where we're able to reflect and to make sure that that we are promoting the values that we share as a community, and I haven't, and so we're engaged in that work as well, mm-hmm. as a county and as a state.
And I know that there have been talk about changing 210 Indian Head Highway to something else, and it's interesting because as I listen to traffic reports, and you hear Indian Head Highway prior to this moment that we are in, it probably, even for those who are perhaps more woke than others, more concerned about social justice, it just didn't hit us, for lack of a better term. Do you think 210 should be changed, the name?
Well, 210 is a state road.
It's a state, true, but it's in the
county.
Yeah, it's
a state road, so I don't know what their process is for.
But you do hold sway in Annapolis. Let's be honest. I mean, come on now. You don't go to Annapolis to visit the sites. When you go and your voice is used for, whether it be public service, political, whatever. I mean, you hold a little sway there. And so if asked by...
Yeah, but you know what? I think we ought to revisit all of them. You're right. Things that generate were things that were divisive, that represent hate, that represent, individuals who didn't promote the values of you know, society now, I think that those are things that are fair game to reconsider what they mean in this moment. And, it, you know, painful symbols of pain, symbols of segregation and racial hatred, those things have no place, no place. They belong in a history book, yes, but I think it is fair to revisit monuments and to revisit roads and other places that, you know, invoke memories of pain and memories of hatred. I think that, that it's fair game to say we don't want those things to currently stand in our community or in society.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks about all things Prince George's County. Wanda calling from Temple Hills. Wanda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Miss Alsobrooks, I follow you as much as I can, and every time you send me a text, trust me, I zero right in on it. My problem is now, what the heck is going on with this vaccine thing? I'm a senior in Prince George's County in Temple Hills, and I mean, it seems like I've been waiting forever to try to get the vaccine. I finally got the okay saying I'm pre-registered, and I have not seen or heard anything since.
Well, thank you, first of all, for calling in, Wanda, and I thank you for reading the text messages. So I appreciate that. But we have moved now into phase two as of tomorrow. And that means that we're opening up eligibility to residents who are 60 and older. And as we go through April, we're going to, every couple of weeks, we'll be even adjusting that. So by the time we get to May, we're going to be accepting people from all phases. But what I can tell you is that we had to follow the regulations sent to us from the state in terms of who could be vaccinated. But you say you're a senior. When this call is done, can I get your information and and check on it for you? I'd love to do that if you allow me after this call. To just check and see where you are, because we certainly want you to be protected. And if you just, you know, maybe if you would share it, I don't know, Harold, how we can get your information. Can you allow us to contact you?
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll have the producer get Wanda's information. So, Wanda, don't hang up. Our producer will get the information from you, and then we can pass it on to Gina.
Okay, you all classified me as 1C, which is, you know, I'm at awe as what the heck is going on.
Well, it's time for us to get you vaccinated. So if you give us your information, you're in 1C. We have to get to you because we're in your category. So if you could allow us to have your contact information, I'll have someone give you a call in the morning.
Yeah. Well, Wanda, don't hang up. The producer is going to pick up. She's going to get your information, and I'll make sure that we get it to the county executive's aide. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Wanda.
Yeah. To that point about entering phase two tomorrow, I want you to, you know, have the floor and explain exactly what that means specific to, you know, Prince George's County, because there has been, you know, so much alphabet soup from county to county, state to state. It can be confusing for a lot of people. So please go right ahead.
It can be. So, for example, Wanda, who just called in, said she's in phase 1C, and we just started actually vaccinating people who are in 1C this past Monday, which is why she probably hadn't heard anything. But we started out with phases 1A and B, which involved essential workers and healthcare workers. So, for example, firefighters, police officers, and those who work in medical facilities. We also started in those phases of vaccinating individuals first who were 75 years old and older. As we moved down to 1B, we got the individuals who were 65 years old and older. We are now moving down to 2A beginning tomorrow. That expands eligibility to residents who are 60 years old and older. By April 13th, we'll be going to phase 2B, and that is for individuals who are 55 years and older. And that also allows us, as we go into phase 2, to start getting to essential workers, front-facing workers, postal workers, for example, making sure we'll start getting to those who work in our grocery stores. who are front-facing, so and those who have underlying health conditions, the diabetes, the individuals who have COPD, for example, breathing, some who have kidney disease and other diseases. So we'll be able to, as a part of phase two, we'll get to those who are under 65, who have pre-existing health conditions and who are front-facing essential workers. And then when we get to phase three, which we expect to get to by the beginning of May, as the president has set out, we'll be able to get to every person of all ages who would be interested in the vaccine.
Are you at all concerned about those who may be essential workers, people who are truly on the front lines, police officers, firefighters, EMS workers, who may not want to take the vaccine? What is your message to those folks?
Well, we want those folks to be protected, not just for themselves, but also for their family members. This is an act, really, of love, that we vaccinate ourselves. It is not just for those individuals, but we vaccinate ourselves because we want to be around our family members again safely. And, you know, I understand, this is the message, I truly understand those who have reservations and who are concerned. Some of those are well-founded concerns. We understand the history in this country. And as the gentleman who called earlier and said, to talk about the Tuskegee experiment, and there are well-founded reasons why black and brown members of our community have a large amount of distrust for the health sector. So we understand that. But what we can tell them is that we do have information. I have been vaccinated, and I have been given information that is effective and safe. There are many others in our community who also believe, based on the information we have, that this is safe for us to take, and we want everyone to be protected. But we'll continue to educate and answer questions and make sure that people feel comfortable receiving the vaccine.
You've spoken about this publicly during your press conferences. Have you convinced your mother?
I have convinced her. Yeah, she told me she was planning to wait 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
She and her cousin Wendy, and she and cousin Wendy have both been vaccinated now. And you know what? And I tell you, I understand, Carol, I'm a person who never even received the flu shot.
Oh, you need to get your flu shot too.
I refuse the flu shot.
Oh, my gracious.
So I was not one who would have ordinarily run to receive a vaccine. But I knew, again, that it was important for me to be vaccinated so that others would know it was safe. And, you know, because, again, we do this for our loved ones.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
just for you.
Well, I'm vaccinated. My mother in Lanham, father and stepmother in D.C., they're all done.
Good.
And,
you didn't have any trouble like I did, Harold, did you?
I had some side effects, but I expected it. Because I got the information, I knew it was coming. I took Tylenol and kept it moving.
Oh,
I mean, you know, that, you know, I want to be able to, you know, hug folks again. I mean, that's the way it is. So
that is the way it is. Yeah. You're right. We want to be back in contact with each other again. We want to move our community forward. We want to be able to open up.
Yes.
Fully.
Mm. Yes. Well, County Executive Angela Also Brooks from Prince George's County, thank you so much for your time. Good luck. Good health to you. We'll be in touch.
Thank you so much, and thank you, WAQR. Right, love you guys.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, March 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.